Marcus, we got a minute left. This is bizarre, too. The Bucks are so good that two UNLV big men in their system can't break through. Now, McCoy's not expected to break through anytime soon, but Chris Wood has been week in, week out, one of the five best players in the G League. He can't break into the freaking lineup or a rotation.
It's insane. I mean, G League phenomenon right now. What, 28 points and with 14 boards, I believe, a game. And I know a lot of folks that cover the G League team about an hour and a half north of Milwaukee. He's done everything that they have asked of him. Remember, we were talking about him at Summer League. Yep. Fantastic there. Fantastic, certainly, now in the G League role. I give him credit, though. His attitude has been very, very good to this point. It's obvious he doesn't want to continue to do this. He wants to be a part of the rotation. But, I mean, stick it out. That's all I can say right now for him, because I do think at some point there will be a role, especially after we get through this offseason, not knowing what will happen with everybody in free agency. He's been too good to this point to ignore.
Marcus, we appreciate it, man. Have a good weekend. Stay warm.
All right, guys. Appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
See ya. There's no need to bring him on and then just mock on where he lives.
Well, he knows.
Hey, he's the one who brought it up.
The Wisconsin Herd. That's the G League team of the Bucks.
Yeah.
They're in Oshkosh.
It's a nightmare.
It's not ideal.
I mean, listen, the best big man of this century for the Rebels, he's been a freaking monster. He can't break through. He has to go to another organization. And if you told people, four years ago, hey, he's going to land with the Bucks eventually, it's a great organization to be with. Yeah. No, because they're 40-13 going to the second half of the 2018-19 season. Insane.
You're 90 seconds away from more Cofield and Company. Right here on ESPN Las Vegas. It's Cofield and Company with Steve Cofield.
Well, I have a microphone and you don't.
So you will listen to every damn word I have to say!
And Adam Hill.
I hate you. I hate you. I don't even know you. And I hate your guts. I hope all the bad things in life happen to you and nobody else but you.
On ESPN Las Vegas.
Rolling into the 4 o'clock hour. Busy day today. We talked a little wrestling with Brandi Rhodes in hour number one. Also, Bucks basketball. I know, it seems weird, right? On a Friday, wrestling and Bucks. Actually, you and I have said this for years, right? This time of year is our favorite part of the year.
Of course.
Because as much as I love football, now it's wide open. And we're going to get into the new football league, the AAF, which is opening tomorrow. John Murray's with us from the Westgate. John, are you guys booking this?
Of course we are. We have futures on it, Steve.
Let's do it. What kind of futures do you have, just for the league title?
Yeah, just odds to win the league. Yeah.
How did you come to the conclusion of who the good teams were?
That's a very good question, Adam. That's why you're in that host chair. We talked to a lot of people. Well, I watched a few of the teams play when I was in San Antonio a couple of weeks ago, and we talked to some league officials. I talked to Kenny White, you guys are both familiar with, got his thoughts on who he thought was good. I huddled with Jay Cornegay, and I huddled with Matt Metcalf, director of Derek Stevens' book Downtown, and we kind of ranked the teams from top to bottom, plugged in odds, and turned the betting on, man. It's good old-fashioned odds-making, Adam.
I have to imagine coaches and quarterbacks are the two keys.
For me, it's always about coaches. I was at the Memphis-Salt Lake game, and I saw Mike Singletary kick a field goal on fourth and a chain link, and I just moved the Memphis Express all the way to the bottom of my rankings right there. So, that's a good way. Because, I don't have anything else to go on, Steve. So yeah. I see that, and I go, okay, this is the worst team. And their quarterback is Christian Hackenberg, so you can imagine.
I can imagine, yeah. I can imagine back to the entire Jets era from Hack being drafted in the second round and storming out of the casino I was at watching the draft. I'm like, I'm
stormed
done.
Stormed out? That's
yes.
Was it for attention, or were you really that upset?
I was really that upset.
Wow.
Ask Adam. There's only a few things I really care about. Yeah. The Jets are one of them, and when the Jets draft like that, I'm like, I'm done. This just ruined the night.
Yeah. Well, what if you had a combination of Singletary and Hackenberg as your coach quarterback duo? How would you feel about a team like that, Steve?
I'd get a job in a different city.
Well, that's why they're at the bottom of my list here. I got them at 10-1. If anybody out there wants to jump in,
that's like Walsh, Montana.
That's the new Belichick Brady for the AAF.
Maybe.
Anyway, you never know. Hey, they could end up being the best team. But just talking to a lot of people in the league, the teams that they thought looked like they'd be good were Arizona and Orlando. Orlando is helmed by Coach Steve Spurrier, the old ball coach.
I'm going to put you on the spot here from a number standpoint.
Do it.
What does the CFL do compared to the NFL, and will this AAF be CFL-like?
Compared to the NFL, 1% maybe.
Okay.
I mean, I doubt it's even that much. I think that the AAF will do better than that just because it's new, and there's a lot of names that people recognize, especially in the coaching staffs and the QBs. I think, and the time of year, too, works well for them, not going up against the NFL. The NFL is very popular with a certain segment of this country. So I think the AAF should do decent handle. My guess is you'll see a lot of wise guys betting pregame and just a lot of public people betting at halftime, especially when the games are on television.
Now, there was a big arrest in the AAF. How much does that impact the line? Clearly,
there was a big arrest. I've been in meetings all afternoon.
What was the arrest?
One of the defensive linemen for Birmingham got busted in a prostitution raid.
Sounds right. Big. If you don't even know the guy's name.
Yeah, so inside joke that even John and I don't know.
Here. Do you happen to know who the individual was, Adam?
He's British. He actually was an Olympian in the in a throwing event in track and field.
He's British? We're talking about American football here.
I know. He's been on a bunch of practice squads.
Oh, no.
His last name's Okoye. I don't know his first name, actually.
Okay.
He's married to a British girl.
Well, that certainly...
You don't know his name?
I know. Something Okoye.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to close the betting on everything here and get to the bottom of this.
Well, it's a clear distraction.
Yeah. We're actually just gonna close the Superbook and figure this out.
That's a good idea. I mean, he's out trolling for prostitutes on the eve of the debut of the league.
Well, no, actually, their game is on Sunday.
Okay.
So he had tonight, and then he had all day tomorrow to collect himself and get ready for the game on Sunday. So it's not as bad as you're leading people to believe.
John Murray's with us from the Westgate. John, nice enough to rush out of a meeting to talk about some guy who got busted. Whatever.
Yeah.
You mentioned old school bookmaking, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are we seeing a little bit of old school bookmaking? Did you see the reports out of New Jersey that while you guys here in Nevada made out well on the Super Bowl, New Jersey lost? What? How do you explain that? What happened?
I mean, I would just be speculating, but my guess is that the promotion stuff was really big in New Jersey.
Yes.
All those places are competing with each other for business. They were basically giving money away in order to get people to sign up with them as opposed to the guy down the street. I can't imagine that they expected to lose that much. I mean, that's a huge percentage of their handle. I saw the handle numbers. I saw the loss numbers. It was a pretty big number. And the margins in our industry are very slim. So it's going to take them a while to recoup those amounts.
The handle was $35 million in New Jersey for Super Bowl, and the loss was about $4.5 million. And you're right, on the promotional deal...
Yeah.
I think it was FanDuel. I know they were doing it. If you signed up, you got a 53-1 money line bet for $5 on either team. You picked a team. So if you won, what'd you wind up getting? $265. So they had all those hits. But I think it's interesting with the regional bias and bookmaking. And I wonder, tell us what the dangers are of if you guys, say on a Super Bowl like the Pats and the Rams, you guys have Pats 2.5 and, you know, they're at Pats 4.
Yeah.
Why would that be bad, or would they be protecting themselves against that bias?
I don't think they'd want to get that out of line,
yeah.
But they had a few other factors playing against them. They probably didn't have much of a future book, Steve. I mean, we won a lot on the Patriots in the future pool because we had the benefit of booking that for a full year, which they didn't have. And it's almost impossible for us to lose on the Super Bowl just because we have so many prop markets. I don't know this for a fact, but I can't imagine any of those books in New Jersey had the number of different prop markets that we had here at the Superbook and a lot of the other books in Nevada had. So your Super Bowl doesn't come down to just the game itself. We lost on the Patriots winning the game, but our overall bottom line on Sunday was pretty good because we did so well in futures and so well in props. These things are all stuff that those guys are going to learn in the next few years, and I doubt very much they'll ever have another Super Bowl like that.
Now, the football season's over, which I know makes you very sad. You're a big football
fan.
Tough.
Oh, yes, it's great. That game on Sunday was very entertaining, Adam. That was just terrific for the contest.
You guys have a long time now before you have to worry about football again, right? So you're not going to take Super Contest sign-ups till like, September?
March 1st.
What?
Super Contest sign-up start. Yeah, we're trying to capture that March Madness crowd, guys. Trying to capture the crowd that comes out here for other stuff like the Kentucky Derby in May. So you can start signing up for the Super Contest and the Super Contest Gold March 1st. We're also running a baseball season wins contest and a college basketball NCAA tournament first round contest. We ran both of those last year, too. So in all four of those contests, you can start signing up for on March 1st.
You guys have baseball up yet? Win totals?
We're going to do that on February 17, whatever the Sunday is, Steve. I think it is the 17th. But, yeah, we're going to have all that stuff up. Yeah, February 17. We'll have all that stuff, baseball win totals, player home run totals, win totals, pitcher win totals, I should say, divisions, playoff yes-no prices. That'll all be up next weekend.
How do you do the numbers if Bryce Harper and Manny Machado have not signed?
That's a good question. And for now, we're just going to have to leave them with no team listed or just not even put up a number at all on those guys. That's the more likely scenario. We'll just skip Machado and Harper. And as they sign with a team, we'll do a number for them. It's a big difference if Bryce Harper is playing in, let's just say, San Diego, or he's playing in a Little League park like where the Phillies play. That's going to really swing his home run number quite a bit.
How about the team win total? What do you do?
We're going to put them up anyway, but certainly we'll keep a close eye on those guys, and it'll have an impact on the win total. But this isn't like basketball where one guy changes teams and it changes the entire dynamic of the league. Baseball is much more of a team game. Certainly if Bryce Harper were to go to one of these teams, their win total would go up, but it's not such a significant amount that we can't hang the number at all.
This is going to be a really stupid question.
Please.
How bad would it be if you were just like, Bryce Harper predicted wins above replacement. Let's just use WAR and add 3.8 wins to the Padres.
No, we wouldn't.
That's
do
not
it
the
like
way it works.
We wouldn't do it like that.
Yeah.
And we would do it on a case by case basis. See where he signed, and it would also impact the other teams in the division. Certainly, the most obvious one would be if he were to go from the Nationals to the Phillies. You'd see the Phillies move up a little bit. You see the Nationals move down a little bit.
Is that number out of line? You know, a 3-win difference for a team with Machado and Harper?
I don't think so. I mean, that sounds about right. I mean, Bryce Harper is one of the best position players in baseball. Got to be worth between 2 and 3 wins to a baseball team.
Think about that. For the audience to hear that, they're like, wait, these guys might sign for $350 million. They boost their team by 3 wins.
Yeah, baseball is the ultimate team game. I mean, no matter how good a player is, he can only come up 1 out of every 9 times. And even then, the other team can just pitch around the guy. You know, baseball is the one sport where that eighth or ninth guy is just as important as the number one guy. It's not like basketball where you can just give the ball to your superstar almost every time down the court.
John, I know you're an MMA guy. There is a big fight card tomorrow in Australia. Did you ever think when you were starting in this business that Anderson Silva's opponent would be a $6 favorite?
No, I didn't. And I had the pleasure of going on the show Wednesday with Big Mac and Misha Tate.
Oh!
Yeah, it was great.
You're welcome, John.
Thank you both. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Chrissy. Thank you, Adam.
John, we raked Big Mac over the coals and said he was snubbing you, and he was like, what are you talking about? Like, he's been asking for months, get him on the show. He's the biggest voice in Vegas. People around the country quote this guy.
Oh, that's a fact. That's a fact. But yeah, what I told them was that all the bets were on Anderson Silva, which is true. We've seen almost nothing but Silva bets here at the Superbook, and actually in the main event, it's been primarily bets on Kelvin Gastelum. But the other fights, this is not a very deep card.
No.
I think you'll agree with me here, Adam. I mean, you've got the top two fights. Those are four well-known guys. But the rest of that card, not much action at all. Very little sharp action at all on this card, and not a whole lot of excitement. But I did get to talk to Ryan and Misha about the main event and about the Silva-Adesanya fight.
Were you nervous talking to Misha?
Oh, God, yeah. I was terrified. I was the most nervous I've ever been before an interview in my career.
You sit face-to-face with us often on Sundays. It's not the same?
No, not at all. And talking to Misha is such a wonderful personality. It was a real pleasure to talk to her.
Adam is a personality.
He's a personality. I love talking to you and Adam.
Yeah.
And, Steve, I'm still mad at Adam because he doesn't believe that I really believe that he's a worker. And it's something that's a real point of contention for me. Like, I'm still rattled by this story he told me where his mother, I guess, told him that she had heard me talking about what a worker he is, and then Adam told her that I was being sarcastic. I hope that Mrs. Hill is listening and she knows that I'm dead serious. That's not sarcasm.
Yeah, Adam doesn't like compliments.
I'll see you at the game tomorrow.
I'm completely serious. Mrs. Hill, don't listen to this guy.
That's it. All right, John, we'll see you. Thank you.
All right, fellas. Take care.
John Murray, Westgate. Can you just give a morsel every once in a while to Linda? Where she can be a little bit proud of you every once in a while?
No.
Yeah, come on.
Just something?
Linda, if we didn't have Linda, we wouldn't have Adam.
She's not listening. She's out of town. Don't worry about
it. Well, I'll send her this clip.
She has snitches, though.
It's true.
Stuff gets back to her.
Yeah.
Bad stuff.
Oh.
That's true.
Well, I'm not disrespecting Linda or Mama Cofield anytime soon.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
You know, we were just talking during the break about our buddy who works at ESPN, Doug Kazarian. I like Doug, but there are times I speak to him via text and I'm like, he is annoying. We have John Boutregros coming up here, and you texted Kazarian, and you're like, is Boutregros cool? Like, we know he's cool, but we wanted, like, the inside dope. And the answer was what?
He's very, very cool and very, very cerebral, which I don't even know what... I mean,
who
I know
answers like that?
I don't know. It's a very professional text. Like, we've been close friends for 10 years. I don't need to be so professional.
John Boutregros is on the horn with us. How you doing, John?
Well, I have a head size of 7 7/8. So maybe that's what Doug meant by
cerebral. Is that what he meant?
Cerebral.
Who answers? He's cerebral.
The sheer size of my skull.
God.
I think it was
Doug
a compliment.
Tends to overthink things.
I think it was a compliment. So, John, how you doing, buddy?
Doug overthinks.
I know he does. He does.
Heart of gold. Heart of gold.
Heart of gold.
Well, maybe.
I love it. All right. I want to ask you how you have developed you have a cult-like following from hockey fans on social media. You're magical.
Because I'm old.
Is that
I've
what
been
it
doing
is?
This a long
no,
time.
That's not it.
I started hosting NHL Tonight in the fall of 1998. So, yeah, I'm like one of those guys who have a baseball card and the print is really small on the back and they got 2,100 career hits. But, you know, they got 100 over 21 seasons.
Right.
That's kind of me.
I think you also have a big advantage over us, aside from the fact that you're on ESPN. I think you're likable. That helps.
You're a jerk.
You are!
He couldn't even pull that off. He's like, I'll try.
I couldn't, could I? I tried to get a little street there on you, a little hardcore. Yeah. And I couldn't even pull that off.
Do it, John. You have my permission.
Yeah, that did not match the Calipari moment with the jag off.
Yeah, that'll probably be my moment of all time. It will be that moment there. And people thought he was serious. But that's, you know, people didn't realize he was tongue in cheek because
we
had worked together for a while. But yeah.
So why are you in town? Mostly pleasure.
Yeah, all pleasure. Just nice. I once Tom Petty and Prince passed away, without me seeing them in concert, it has become a rest of my life on this planet bucket list. Although bucket list really speaks more towards one moment thing you have to do. This is more a genre. I want to make sure I see people who I want to see in concert before they go, before I go, and before they go. And Van Morrison is on that list. So I checked the schedule, and it worked out where I get to see a Van Morrison concert tonight and go see a Golden Knights Blue Jacket game tomorrow. So I'm knocking off two things at once, in last night, back Sunday, and back to work Monday. So, yeah, so it's my goal to see people in concert, preferably in their prime. That's the subtext of the quest for the rest of my life, is make sure I see people I haven't seen, but also try to see them in their prime.
I'm totally with you on this, and I made the pitch to these guys on the show that I have to see Cher, and I was not greeted with open arms on that one.
That's cool. Yeah, I'm okay with Cher. Again, she wouldn't make my list, but I respect. I don't judge people's musical tastes at all. Like when people, you know, there's so many people who have this high and mighty view of music, and I don't have that. I don't. You know, whoever you like, you like. If you like Cher, if you can turn back time, gosh darn it, do it.
She makes me cry. Did you like the halftime show with Maroon 5?
Again, I'm not, you know, I like a couple of their songs. I like a couple of their songs, but again, I don't own any Maroon 5 albums. I won't go see them. They're not on the concert list for me. But again, I know some people really enjoy them. And, he, you know, he's, he's a fine little fellow. So, you know, I'm okay with it.
I don't know if he's that little anymore. Actually, I was recommending the shirt
like
off prop.
130 pounds.
Well,
stop it.
John, he's gotten a lot bigger, though. He's doing he's gaining like 40 pounds.
That's just HGH. If he's 135 tops.
Exactly. Exactly. That's why I was
5'5", 140.
Is that short? I didn't know that.
Almost Hollywood. I'm guessing, but I bet I'm close to being right.
John, you're kind of a heightist. You're a tall guy.
I am a heightist. You're right.
Yeah, very smug about your height.
I'm 6'4", 6'5", with the hair.
Yeah. Okay. There you go.
Who else is on your list?
Of height?
No. Of that you have to see.
Well, that's a good question. You know, I'm going to go see John Mayer this summer in New York City because, again, he's a guy who's in his prime. I have about five of his albums. I love his work. A couple years ago, I saw Pearl Jam. I'd never seen Pearl Jam in the 90s, so I think I saw them at Fenway Park.
Nice.
So, there's probably a few more. On top of my head, I can't quite think of them. Actually, you know, funny you said, there aren't that many left. Like, I've done a good job knocking that off and have seen people before. I do want to see Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
Again, I'm a huge Beatles fan, a big Paul McCartney fan, and I've never seen him. And, I'm running out of time, let's face it. And I'd like to see if I might be able to knock that off this year or next. But there's others. There's up-and-comers, too, that eventually they'll probably add to the list. They might only be one or two albums in now, but they might get added to the list. But, there's probably a couple more I can't quite think top. But I've done pretty well. I've done decent. Not great, but decent.
Well, you are you're going to the Golden Knights game tomorrow, so make sure you don't mention Imagine Dragons as being on your list. They are not well loved.
Yeah, they wouldn't quite. Again, a couple of songs are fine, and I'll listen to them and hum along. But I would, again, I don't have any of their albums. I wouldn't go see them in concert.
Well, they are still blamed by many for the Stanley Cup collapse because they played before Game 2.
Well, that seems a little harsh.
I agree. Seems ridiculous.
But people, hey, sports fans are passionate. That's why we love them. You talked about why I might have such a following. I think one reason why is because I'm a pretty emotional, passionate person, and hockey fans are very emotional, passionate people. It's an emotional, passionate sport. It's a blood sport. And, you know, I played every sport growing up, and hockey's the only one I played. You know, I'm talking high school or pickup or whatever. It's the only one I played that made me lose my mind, like completely lose my mind, where I would hit someone over the head with a stick. Like, and so when that happens, like, I don't get all high and mighty, and I don't give sermons on violence and hockey and things, because I know from playing it, you know, at the level that I did, that once in a while you lose your mind, and afterwards, like, what was I doing? What was I thinking? But it's the nature of the sport. It's a frustrating sport. It's a difficult sport. It's very difficult. It's hard to score. It's very difficult. So that is gonna. It's like road rage. It's that feeling that some of us might get. A road rage. Most of us can control it. We're not going to get out of our car and smash the window with a 7-iron. But some people actually do that. And we're like, you know what? I wouldn't do that, but I kind of understand how you can get taken to that point.
Yeah. Steve, who's been talking to you a lot, he's one that will do that. He will break a windshield. I'm convinced.
Yeah. You know, we all have those friends that have smashed smoke alarms in college dorms and things like that out of frustration. You know, it happens. But I'm not a violent person. So
tomorrow night you will be over at T-Mobile for Blue Jackets and Golden Knights. I believe it's your first experience at T-Mobile.
Yeah, first time there in any capacity, concert or hockey game. And I want to take it in. When I'm doing SportsCenter and doing the highlights, it really helps me. If I go to that venue just to have I just feel like it gives me a little better sense. Like I went to my first Duke game a couple years ago in Cameron. And it's like, you know, it wasn't really anything how I really expected. I don't really put expectations on. I just kind of go and experience. But it was, wow, I didn't really think of this, because you really can't expect anything until you actually, you know, do it and feel it and how big it is and everything. And it's like, wow, this is really cool. Now when I watch a game or I do the highlights, I've been there. So I don't know. I just feel like I connect better with the arena when I'm doing the highlight at work if I went there. So I do it on my own dime. I'm here on my own dime. I come here because I want to see a hockey game. I like hockey, and it worked out great.
So there's, you know, so much talk about the in-arena production and everything around it, and certainly during the playoffs last year it was very highlighted during the broadcast. But, you know, when you talk to people or when you think about coming to a Golden Knights game, do you think that kind of stuff is over the top and hokey, or is it, hey, that's just a cool entertainment value for the fans that are there?
Yeah, I haven't. Again, I haven't experienced yet, so I'm kind of curious. But no, I mean, I'm fine. Hey, that ship has sailed in terms of how loud it is, and between, you know, even between play while they're waiting for a face-off, how they crank the music. You almost wonder once in a while, can they alternate and don't play any music? People can, you know, and just kind of have some quiet space for a second. But they fill it. You know, they bombard people's senses really the whole game. And but that's happened. That's been happening for a long time. It started in the late '80s and early '90s, and obviously you're trying to expand your fan base, and that's the way you do it. And once the game starts, it's still the game. It's still a great game. I'm just looking forward to seeing a great game as well. But I do want to take in the experience and see what they do, and see if it is too much or if it's fine. And I'll know better after tomorrow night.
There you go. So what is your read on the Golden Knights, their team? Last year, of course, they come in to the league, completely blow expectations out of the water. They go to the Stanley Cup Finals this year, sitting in third place, kind of comfortable for a playoff position, but not quite the same team they were last year. What is your read on kind of where they are right now?
I still think they're an elite team. I think the problem is they're going to have, you know, the toughest first-round matchup maybe in the playoffs. You know, it's either looks like Calgary's probably going to win the division, and looks like Vegas is probably going to play San Jose. And so that means San Jose or Vegas is out in the first round. So you're going to go through this really incredible year. You get 100 points again, and you have a great team, and bam, you're done in early April or late April. And that's going to happen. And you know, we're going to lose a really good team. And it could be the Knights. You know, they could be out in the first round this year after going to the finals, and it wouldn't be like they had a miserable year. And that's hockey. The games are close. The playoff games are really close. It's going to go six or seven games because, I mean, it's a good team they're playing, and they might lose. But that doesn't mean, obviously, but that's hockey. You know, last year was not hockey. The norm is more like this year. We really we could be done, and it could be the first round or it could be the second round. So but they're still, I think, an elite team with a Hall of Fame goaltender, and they still could, I think, they, no reason why they couldn't get back to the Cup Final again.
We just went through a crazy trade deadline in the NBA with one major trade out there that didn't quite happen, but a lot of movement. How do you expect the trade deadline season to be in the NHL this year?
Yeah, you got some big-time possible rentals like a Panarin, and with free agents coming up next year, Duchesne and Stone. So I think it's going to be active. I think teams are going to go for it. I think they're going to be aggressive and try to get that piece, and even if they trade, you know, a number one and a prospect or two. And certainly Vegas is in a position with drafting and getting extra draft picks and having prospects now in their system starting to play, that people can see that they're going to be a team that perhaps can do that if they want, if they can make the salary work and such. But it's going to be an active time, I think.
Hey, John, we appreciate it. Sorry if we ruined the this part of your vacation, but thanks for a couple minutes.
It's all good, brothers. Going to Jones to get some crab.
Oh, nice. Good choice. Good. Very good choice. Enjoy dinner. Thank you.
Peace.
There you go. John Buchgross, hockey expert, longtime SportsCenter anchor, heightist.
We learned that. Cerebral.
It is funny with tall people. They do get upset at the Hollywood types.
Yeah, because they're little.
I wasn't... Because that is fact. I wasn't trying to judge Adam Levine's height. I'm trying to think back to who he was on stage with. So that means they're all small. So big boy's not that big.
Travis Scott not that big. Maybe they are all tall. Maybe he was.
He just said Adam Levine's like 5'5".
He was making that up.
You think he was?
He's 6 feet tall.
Oh, he is.
Yeah.
Again, height is 6'4". Everyone looks 5'5" to him.
Exactly.
What a nightmare.
Yeah, he was making that up.
So, do you think ESPN works like this place? In terms of when new people come in, like Kazarian used to be here on 13 doing sports. He goes to ESPN. Do you think the highest level guys who have been there, the highest level women, like Linda Cohn's not talking to Doug Kazarian for 5 years?
I think that's true.
She cannot. Now she's in LA, but when she was in Bristol, she's like, who are you? No, you're probably not going to be here in a year. I'm not wasting my breath on you.
I don't know if that's in general, but I think Doug had told me there were certain people that definitely he didn't know for the first couple of years.
And is that right?
It was just they were like,
good, I like it.
Okay, newbie, earn your time to talk to us.
You're sort of like that here. You have a ton of people you don't know, and you don't even bother to talk to. You're like,
it's
who? Do you know who I was? I was Mr. X back in 2005. I put in my time. I don't know you.
I've talked about this, though. It's the exact opposite. It's not that I'm superior. I think I'm inferior to everyone that I've ever met.
I'm a bottom feeder.
You are a bottom feeder.
I don't think anybody actually cares to know me or talk to me.
Oh,
or
no.
See me.
No, that's not the way it works. You know that's not the way it works. People get mad.
I'm sure they do, but
people have said it about me, and I'm like, listen, I'm just head down. I'm working. It's nothing against you.
Mine's the exact opposite. I look at everybody like, wow, I mean, you're way better than me. I don't deserve to be talking to you.
You've heard it, right, Chrissy? That people think, I don't know if they think Adam has an attitude. They think I do, and it's like, I just storm around the building to work. Like, I told the story to you guys off the air. I'll tell it on the air. Yesterday, I encountered two conversations where one salesperson was talking to a boss, and they're talking about finding gluten-free cake. And I'm like, I don't have time in the workday to talk gluten-free cake, all right? Nor do I have, we've got, I think it was an admin person and a tech person, and all I hear is a long conversation about stone ground mustard. I'm like, who has time for this? And if I pick my head up and start speaking to someone, you know, what's the conversation going to be about?
There's
balloons?
Yeah, but I think you're missing the point that everything here is so perfect and smooth that everybody just has time to do stuff like that.
It's a good point.
Look, that is a good point. Glass half empty, half full.
Yeah.
Well, mine wasn't half empty. I just don't understand the weird conversation.
Mine
but Adam,
wasn't sarcastic at all.
Adam was.
I know. I get you now. Yes. Don't worry.
A well-oiled machine.
And you are in a higher higher demand than you believe you are.
No, that's not true.
It
that's
is true.
Not true
before,
at all.
He is not liked.
It is
no.
true.
No, he's not.
Do you know how many people contacted me from the state that I lived in before here?
For what?
To have him come on before the...
That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about his likability at the workplace.
I know, but I'm saying the likability doesn't have to just be isolated to here. It can
no,
stretch
me,
out.
Me as a figure, like in demand, yes, of course. Because
he's
talented.
He's totally fake, too.
And I'm very
he's,
talented.
He's completely fake outside the market.
I mean, me as a person...
You got to hear him do these spots. They're ridiculous. He's upbeat. He's fired up. He's positive. He's glass overflowing. I'm like, we don't get any of this. You put on this whole new aura for people out of the market.
Yeah, me as a radio guest, I can see that I'm in very high demand. Me as a person, nobody cares at all.
Music bucket list, Adam. Who is it? You're not ready. My God.
It's Eminem.
Okay.
Ooh, that's a
it's
good
absolutely it absolutely is. I have come close to seeing him a couple of times. I really wanted to go to the Jay-Z Eminem show in Detroit. That was absolutely part of my plan, and then it didn't happen. It was like 3 years ago, and I was very sad that I missed that.
Hall & Oates was on mine. I did get to see them.
Okay.
Queen, I understand that I can't see Freddie Mercury.
You can see Adam Lambert.
But I will see that. So
yeah, I sent out the question to the audience. I sent out Debbie Gibson, Chicago, and Neil Diamond.
Debbie Gibson?
I don't think I'm going to see Neil Diamond because I think he's got something bad, like Parkinson's. Not good. Maybe one last show. That'd be cool.
But Chicago's cool.
And for Ryan,
6-4?
Yeah, for Ryan McKinnell, still no Metallica. RJ Bell is with us. He's a lunatic when it comes to music. Bucket list, RJ, before they perish, who do you want to see?
So this can't be people who are already not able to be, like, I can't say Skinner or whatever, the original Skinner or whatever.
Right, they have to be alive, and they're probably close to death.
By the way, though, just to let you know, if I could have one, like, go back in time, I would take it over, like, 5 today. But it would, I mean, to see Zeppelin in their prime, about a year and a half ago, they had a Phantom event where they had a Zeppelin concert in the movie theaters. I haven't done psychedelics since college, so it's been 25 years. I almost had like an LSD level experience watching Zeppelin in a movie theater. Imagine how it would have been live.
I wonder what the audience was like at Zeppelin shows. They must have all been freaking whacked and sky high.
Yeah, well, remember, the song remains the same, which isn't a great live album, but you see a ton of the crowd. I think it's at MSG at the time, you know, or not at the time, but MSG. A lot of it was like the harder edge hippies, it seemed like to me.
So we always talked to RJ Bell this time about the world of sports gaming. My bucket list for this portion of the show for guest is Darren Rovell. Yeah, not really. You had it out briefly with Darren Rovell, and I thought it was an interesting topic. Rovell sent out a tweet about what? Having a snitch, basically, on Maroon 5's first song?
Yeah, there was something about this first song plays, and he has a smug tweet that says, yep, knew that one, plus 900, baby, but I kept it from my degenerate coworkers. And I'll be honest with you. I had, and Steve, we've known each other, what, 7-8 years now?
Yes.
Followed each other on Twitter the whole time. What are you laughing at, Adam?
No,
we're very tight. We're very tight. That was the point.
No. I feel that way.
Yes, maybe. Tighter than Adam and I. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, no chance of that.
Believe me, yes.
But here's what I'll say. When have you ever seen me take the initiative, draw first blood in a disagreement on Twitter?
Never.
Literally, never. Adam, you ever see it?
No.
Never. So I look at this, I'm like, wait a minute. This guy, ESPN formerly, and let's give Revell a ton of credit. If you want to know about how many calories a hot dog has at Dodger Stadium, I mean, he's the go-to, no doubt.
Is that credit?
Well, I mean, everyone can judge that.
Yes.
But you know, if you want to know about, like, Topps, George Brett's baseball card, rookie card, I mean, listen, unmatched. But he doesn't know sports betting. I mean, it's pretty obvious. But when ESPN, and, you know, these are rumors, so we'll say allegedly, when ESPN said, we will not sign you at any price, you know, when it was up, and I think it makes sense, right? The internet's moved away from the, you know how at the bottom of your browser it used to be a lot of, like, look what Jan Brady looks like now, you won't believe it kind of things. That's kind of like Darren Revell to me on Twitter. He was very successful for a while, give him credit, made a lot of money, and things have passed him by, it seems like. Would anyone disagree with that?
I've always found him unbearable, but I get your point.
Yeah, he was. But listen, he has 2 million followers.
Right.
Right. Let's give him credit. Again, Dodger dogs.
No, does he, though?
Well, that's interesting, Adam. Feel free to speak.
Well, I think we've discussed it. First of all, I don't know how Steve saw this interaction, because aren't you blocked?
I am blocked by Revell.
Okay.
Oh, you too? Join the club, man.
Because I'm one of the many people who called him on his bullcrap, or in this case, I just mocked on him being a complete non-athlete, trying to guard Kristaps Porzingis, and he almost crapped himself and fell on the floor.
Well, I saw him on Radio Row. He looks like he's 5'4". How tall is he?
I don't know. I'm not a heightist. We just got into the height thing. Yeah, I'm not tall. Here's the thing. I think if you're going to – Listen, we mock on athletes. Revell, I think, is mean-spirited at times. And here's the thing. We're in a culture now, RJ, and this is with a lot of media people. Now that we can respond to media people, unlike any other era, there's a lot of people who are dish it but can't take it, folks.
Well, listen, Revell's followed me for 10 years on Twitter, and there's probably been 25 times he's taken my content, repurposed it without attribution.
Yep.
So he's followed me very closely, right? Actually, the first TV hit I ever did ever was on CNBC with him, like in 2006 or 7. So I had no problem with him.
So explain that tweet, RJ. Explain why it's dangerous that he had the information and then he made a comment about working with degenerate gamblers.
Yeah, and so what he said was, I had this, but I didn't give it to my D-Gen coworkers. And to me, it just struck me. I looked at it and I said, you know, this guy just doesn't get it. He's a tourist. And when ESPN, you know, allegedly said no, thank you, he went to a gambling site. Why? Because you think because of a love of gambling? No, because it was probably, I'm guessing, history tells us, the highest offer. Now, if he would, Steve, you and I consider you to be like a super sharp radio host when it comes to gambling, and I say that genuinely. When I had a crack at a national show on the weekends, you were my first call to co-host, and you did an amazing job. And I've said this privately, I'll say it publicly, I don't think I'd have, straight out of Vegas, by the way, 4 o'clock over on 920, I don't think that I'd have it without you, because you did such a good job on that show. But you always presented yourself as the square chair, knowing, though you know a lot about sports betting, compared to Fezzik, you don't. Right?
Right.
So it was wonderful. If Revell would just say, guys, I cover media segments and niches, and sports betting's booming. I'm here for the ride, but I know I'm not an expert. Help me see it, and I'm going to be the voice of the fan kind of thing. To me, the voice of the $20 bettor, that would be an awesome spot.
Yep.
Right? And on our show, Jonas Knox plays that role, and he knows probably more about betting than Revell. Instead, Revell wants to act like he knows everything about everything. So I finally tweeted out, I said, this shows you the problem, I said, with the influx of personalities into sports betting. Someone who is not an expert and also doesn't understand the ethos, the culture. Here's the culture. And oh, by the way, guys, I don't need to, you don't need to believe me. Here's the actual facts. It's ironic. An hour before, Steve, why don't you explain this? And so it's just not my voice, what I did with the national anthem.
Oh, you gave out information that, you know, you'd heard that rehearsals had gone over. I think you said multiple times, right, with Gladys Knight?
Exactly. I had true inside info, whereas it was a friend of a friend that I trusted.
Yep.
And in the way I did it, they were DMing me, and I said, well, screenshot and show me your friend's stuff verbatim immediately. Because if they said, oh, well, I don't have screenshot or whatever, you know they're kind of like, he screenshot and sent it to me. So I put it up verbatim that there were two rehearsals. One was a minute 59. One was 2.00. And the over-under was a minute 55. And we can talk about the whole controversy there if you want, but forget that for a second. And I tweeted out, said, guys, there are no sure things, but I am not uncertain about this. This is some solid info. I got more love than I've ever gotten. Everyone's like, RJ, you made me $50, right? How many people made $50 from that with 180,000 followers? I don't know, a lot. I know multiple books took it down after about a half hour, but still a lot of people got to bet before that. The New York Post, by halftime, had a story about the tweet saying books were, it was a catastrophe because there was so much money being made. The New York Post, because I shared the information, right? Instead, he's not sharing the information with all of us, with his followers, and not even his coworkers. It's like this guy doesn't understand gambling. It's like we want to beat the bookie together. We don't, you know, and so that's all I said. I said, you're a tourist. I said, wake up. It was not even that critical. So he tried to ignore it, right? But he was getting crushed. RJ, finally, you know, flat, you know, blah, blah, blah. So the next morning he replies, oh, he hung himself here. He goes, well, and I'm not sure this is exactly
good, good
his
impression.
Voice. Say it again, Adam?
That was a good impression.
Yeah, it was, well, you know, my wife and I, we were having a very private moment, and because she loves Maroon 5, and it was something I did for her, and I didn't want to soil it. And, oh, by the way, my friends are worth hundreds of thousands of dollars in media, and they let me in a rehearsal I wasn't supposed to be in. So you expect me to hang it out to dry so you all can win money? So it was like, okay, let's think about this a second. One, you didn't mention your wife. So, hey, that's great. If that's true, congratulations. I hope you had a nice moment, genuinely. Okay. But here's what's fascinating. He wouldn't hang out his ability to get into the rehearsal to dry, that person that allowed it, enabled it, to help us win money or help his friends win money. Though with his friends, I guess, I don't know, is his co-workers his friends? I'm not sure with Darren Revelle, but who knows? But you would think, who would have found out if he would have told 5 or 6 of his co-workers, right? But even if he would have told everybody, we all would have benefited, and maybe his friend would have got exposed, and I get it. Don't do that. But now, because you got a little bit of heat from me, you're going to expose the guy by telling how you got in, explaining why he didn't want to tell earlier. He was telling now. So what he told us is he wouldn't even let his friends know, though it was no exposure to his buddy, but he would hang his buddy out just so he didn't have to deal with a little criticism from me. I mean, he got crushed more on that than he did on the original. And then literally like an hour later, he blocked me.
Yep.
And
he's
did,
a child.
I don't understand with Twitter, but it made it where the original tweet that I retweeted wasn't visible on most. I think some it was, but almost everyone said, I can't see his original tweet anymore. So he literally was trying to remove the evidence of
right.
what he originally did.
Darren Revelle is not a journalist.